Hi, my name is Charles Feldman.
And my name is Ela Edgar, and we are here for another episode of Trust on Purpose.
And today, do you want to just start us off on what we're going to talk about today?
Yes.
I think we've got a really interesting and practical topic.
Thank you, Charles. So this morning, one of my favorite fellow coaches, Lori Hillis, posted a quote by James Clear. And it really resonated for me this morning, especially with the teams that I'm working with currently. Yeah, but here's the quote, and it says, "Are the results I'm expecting aligned with the habits I'm following each day?" Can I say that one more time? Are the results that I'm expecting aligned with the habits I'm following each day? So there's really chewing on this as it relates to what are our intentional trust-building behaviors. So the conversation before the conversation was quite interesting. So Charles, I'm going to pause here. What comes up for you as I share that quote from James Clear?
Yeah, specifically in relation to trust, we may have intentions to behave in more trustworthy ways, or to enact certain behaviors that will build trust. And what in some cases needs to happen is we may have a particular behavior or set of behaviors that we habitually go to, particularly when we're triggered, but maybe not even that, maybe just how we are on a day-to-day basis. We're practicing this habitual behavior that is not at all aligned with the trust building that we want to do with our teams, with our employees, with our boss, whatever it is, with our peers. So yeah, totally, that the quote makes sense. And there are a couple things that come up for me. One is, it's hard to replace a habit with nothing. So if I want to change habits, I need to have a different behavior to go to. And we've talked a little bit about that with Amanda Blake in a previous episode. So we have to actually have a habit or a behavior that we go to that will be more in line with the expectations that we're trying to move towards or create. And we have to also be able to recognize when we're falling back into our old behavior and be able to stop ourselves and bring in the new behavior, try this new something different. Those are the things that come up. And the other piece, of course, is having experienced this a few times myself, that it doesn't always work the first time or even a few times. It may take a while. It may be that you're laughing here. Oh, something. I thought I got you. Yeah, it may take a few times. And so it's okay to 15, 20 minutes later, an hour later, go, oh man, I just fell back into my old behavior. Okay, well, let's now go back and take a look at that and replay that and see where I might have actually caught it and moved into the different or new behavior and starting to build a new habit. A whole lot there. But yeah, those are the things that came to mind.
Okay, so I started laughing because I've been waiting to use this. It's called the shitty first pancake.
Oh, yeah, the shitty first pancake.
The shitty first pancake, right? So all of us who have ever made pancakes, whether they're breakfast, lunch, or dinner, doesn't matter. We have no judgment about pancakes for dinner. The first pancake never turns out right. It's shitty. The pan isn't hot enough. We had too much batter, too little batter. You know, we flipped it and half of it landed on the stovetop. It's the shitty first pancake. And so there's also permission here. I think this is an intention. This is something that I want. It's important to me. And here's why. And knowing that we're not going to get it right every single time. And sometimes it takes 2, 3, 10, 40 pancakes until we figure out, oh, here's the magic of how much the temperature, what's, you know, whatever the recipe is. So full permission to play with your pancakes. It's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And besides, the ones that didn't work out well, you can still put a lot of syrup on them and they're okay.
They're palatable.
Yeah, they're edible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things as we were talking in the conversation before the conversation, I really love how James Clear takes this into things that are really bite-sizable. So if you want to wake up earlier, well, you start by setting your alarm clock 5 minutes earlier. if you want to eat healthier, well, that's two bites of vegetables before you eat your dinner. If you want to become more mindful, maybe that's meditating or pausing for 60 seconds. These are bite-sizable things that we can do versus I have this big grandiose that I'm going to suddenly become this type of person with these types of behaviors. And guess what? Life gets in the way. I get busy. I'm like, whatever, I'll do that tomorrow. And I lose the ability, as you know, to get on the mat and practice. I take myself out of that.
Yeah. And as we think about that in terms of practicing behaviors that build trust, and let's just make something up here that we've both seen in our coaching careers somewhere. The team leader who wants to invite his team members to speak more instead of it being the leader's meeting and very little input from the team. Let's say that that team leader says, okay, declares, I want to do this differently, and maybe even declares it to the team.
Mm-hmm.
There's a risk there, of course, because that first pancake or three or four pancakes is not going to be quite in line with the expectation. There's a risk that there could be some trust lost because, hey, this guy said this, but that he's not behaving this way at all, or this woman. So it helps to have some support. It helps to say to the team ahead of time, hey, I recognize that this is going on, and I think we would be better served doing something different. And I recognize whatever it is. So here's what I want to practice in order to be able to enable a different way of all of us being together, rather than just blah, blah, blah on my own. I want to leave space for you all. And then there's that moment when it's time to practice. And so what do you say? And there's this silence in the room because everybody's used to the boss just taking it over. Even when the boss asks, what do you think? There wasn't sincerity there in the past. So now there is sincerity, but it looks the same, sounds the same. Nobody's going to venture into that right away.
So here's where habit stacking might come into play. This is, I'm being transparent as a leader. This is something that is important to me. This is a behavior I want to change. So when I ask a question, I will pause for count of five. And I don't know if you just saw this. I just ordered this from Amazon. I have a bag of 50 tiny rubber ducks that there's a group of leaders coming to do a leader as coach with me. And each of them will get a duck as a reminder to shut the duck up. So we can habit stack. We can have a visual reminder. We can write something on a sticky that this is a practice that's important to me. Here's why I'm changing my behavior. When I ask a question to create more space, I'm going to pause and count to five in my head, or I'm going to look at my duck as a reminder to keep my mouth shut and listen because this is something that's important. Now, the power, and we talked a little bit about this with Amanda too, the power of the feedback loop and learning and sharing our change of behaviors in our community is that our team can say, I saw that you paused for 5 seconds, or I see your deck is a reminder on the table. I want to acknowledge that you're doing and practicing what you said you're going to do. Or maybe as I'm like chopping my hand with my neck, right? Maybe there's a visual sign like, okay, you didn't give us 5 seconds. And this is part of the humanness of learning together and being vulnerable and bold and sharing what we're working on.
Yeah. That, I think, right there builds trust.
Yeah.
In a huge way.
Yeah.
Acknowledging, this is what I want to work on, and this is why I want to work on this. I think we'll get better results as a team if I talk less, you talk more. And so I'm inviting you to do that. And in fact, it may be that I may need to be silent for considerably longer than 5 seconds before one of you speaks up. So in effect, really, we're not changing just my behavior. I'm inviting you into changing the behavior of this entire team.
Yeah.
And I recognize that the behavior that we've been stuck in, results from my habit of talking and just talking over, not really asking for input. And when you do ask for input, kind of going in and micromanaging you, I recognize that's another one of my behaviors that I want to stop. So let's try this.
The plus also that I think makes this even more powerful is that we choose to practice this not just at work, but how can I engage and practice this in all aspects of my life? So at the family dinner table, and I just pause there on purpose, right? Can I ask a question and then can I hold for five?
Yeah.
Wherever I'm in a, you know, Shoppers Drug Mart talking to somebody in the line, can I ask a question or hold space before? And so we look for these opportunities to test drive because the repetition and the practice is important. And we don't want to wait for the perfect moment to go, oh, here's where I can try it on. This is so great. Rather, where are the tiny little places where we continue to practice? And then notice what's happening or shifting because I'm more committed to my practice.
Yes. And also trying it out in reasonably low risk situations if possible. So one of the things, again, you and I both have encountered before is working with clients who just by default say yes to any request they get. In fact, they volunteer, they offer, even before the request comes, they offer to do things. And there are various reasons why they do this. And at some point, as a client, they've recognized along the way that, okay, yeah, this is not something that's serving me and is not serving my team, my peers, my boss, whoever, because I'm actually failing to get things done. Stuff is falling off the table and not being attended to. And this is not how I want to be. I want to be trustworthy in the domain of reliability, which is, I get it. It's going to require me to say, at the very least, renegotiate or make counteroffers to requests that I can't fulfill or don't believe I can fulfill. Sometimes even say no. So that's great. Good. So now you have a new behavior. And maybe the new behavior is simply to say, I'll get back to you. I need to check on something. I need to find out if I have the resources and time to do this. But taking that pause in some way and saying, okay, how do I really need to respond to this that is in service to me being highly reliable and delivering everything that I promised to deliver without failing to deliver at home what I need to as a wife or as a husband or as a father or as a mother because I'm working so much. And so that pause, okay, stop, take a breath, stop, take a breath. And don't try this when the CEO of your company asks you to do something. Try it when one of your peers asks you to do something and when the stakes are really. So until you can build up not just the mental and even emotional aspects of being able to say no or being able to make a counteroffer, but the body that can do it, the body that can actually form the words no and have them come out your mouth.
Have you been peeking inside of my head? I think I've shared before how that's probably the domain that I bump into the most is reliability, because I overextend myself or underestimate how long it takes things to get done. So that's something I am very aware of. And I don't know if you noticed, but while you were talking about this, I changed my posture.
Yes, I did.
I sat up, my shoulders lowered, shoulder blades back into my back pockets, my head lifted a little bit. And my narrative inside was, what does it feel like to be a reliable person? What does it feel like to be trusted in the domain of reliability? And what does that body look like? And again, we touched on this a little bit last week with Amanda, but I think this is where the power of the practice in not just the physical moments or the physical words or the pause that we bring, But at the dinner table, when I pause before jumping in and filling space and time, what does it feel like to be a person that creates space for others? Or in my reflections, what does it feel like for me to not overcommit, to be someone who follows through on their commitments?
Yeah. And what that brings to mind for me is there are times when I have, and fairly recent times I can think of, where I have said yes to doing something that it's not based on time or resources, it's simply based on the will to do it. I've said yes, knowing or having the sense that I really don't have the will to do whatever that is. That's a struggle for me. So recognizing that feeling in my body, ooh, this is a place where maybe I should think about, do I really want to say yes here? Or do I really want to make this offer? And then take a pause and feel into that. And ooh, the answer is no. Okay, I'm not going to say yes. But taking that pause, which is the replacement behavior right. to just saying yes.
Right. I think this is so, so fascinating that we have these lofty and aspirational expectations. And I think that's lovely that that's what we want. I want to be this or I want to do that. And if I'm dead honest about some of the things that I aspire to, and then I look at my behaviors and my habits, I see that there's a big gap. And this is an opportunity. I'm totally not beating myself up over these things, rather reconsidering, are they still important to me? And if so, what are the small habits that I want to embody and practice that get me closer to those dreams and aspirations than further away?
Yeah. So in a sense, it starts with intention.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do something different here. I want to show up more trustworthy with my team as a leader, not just somebody who talks at them, but actually leading an invitational way with my team, opening up space for all of them to be part of the conversation. Or I want to be more reliable. I want to be trustworthy in the domain of reliability, whatever it is, but have that attention. So that's the starting point. But as you say, if my next move is to say every time a request is made for me, of me, I'm going to say, you know, no, I'm going to practice saying no, that's not realistic. It's not going to happen that way.
It's not realistic. Yeah.
Or even every time I'm going to stop and take a breath and think about it. Or every time that there's a long silence when I ask my team for their thoughts, that I'm going to actually let that silence extend until somebody opens a part of a conversation. No, I'm probably not going to do that, especially mm-hmm. the first three or four mm-hmm. or 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to take it. Okay, I'm going to give them till I count to 10 or 5 or whatever it was. You must count to 5 pretty slowly.
I do.
So I think I would need to count to 10.
I count to 5 quite slowly. And this has been a practice since the days of being a recruiter and interviewing people, where I intentionally slowed down. And so now a long, uncomfortable silence is super comfortable for me. It's uncomfortable for the people that I'm working with until I tell them my intention behind it. But it took years of practice to get there, which I think is another thing where we think, oh, well, I'm going to do this, you know, half a dozen times, or I'm going to focus on this for, you know, a couple weeks and then check, I've got it. But sometimes it takes much longer. And to give ourselves permission for the duration and not the immediate gratification of like, oh my God, I've totally rocked this. I've got it already. Do you? Maybe. Maybe you do. Maybe you do.
Yeah. It's possible.
It's possible.
Yeah. And check that. Over time, let's see if what the evidence shows you.
And this is a very recent conversation with a client. They work in such a fast-paced environment. It is go, 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 because of the nature of their business. So she has trouble finding places to think or pause or exhale because she's running from one thing to the next all day. And so while in the moment we were being kind of silly, it actually then made sense. What if you had 5 extra breaths when you go to the washroom? You're going to the washroom anyway. What if you give yourself 5 or 10 extra deep breaths? And that's a place to start building practice of pause and space. And again, we were literally peeing ourselves laughing when we were coming up with this idea. But she's like, but it's possible. That's actually not such a crazy idea. And if that's the one place that it gives me some pause, I'm willing to try it on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the invitation is we can get really creative with ways on how we can try on new behaviors and what we're replacing them with. So, you know, if it's important for us to learn to say no, I don't know, maybe when you're driving to work, say no out loud. See what it feels like in your body and your voice. Hear it. What does it feel like to say no?
Yeah. Bring up a recent situation where you said yes, or you probably should have made a counteroffer, or at the very least said, hey, I need to check some other things out before I come back and tell you anything. And practice that and see what it might have felt like to do something different. Yeah. And I think we've kind of touched on it, but I think the other thing to do is having that accountability, asking someone you do trust to support you, saying, I'm trying to change my behavior around this. I want to do something different. And I would really like you to let me know how you see it. What's going on for you as you watch me? And it could be just one person on the team. You don't have to ask the whole team to do this. It could be one trusted team member. It could be one of your colleagues, your boss, if you're trying to do something that just is about you and other folks individually. So it's intention. And then what is it you're going to pay attention to? Attention. How are you going to do that? And even just taking your 5 breaths after you use the bathroom rather than before. But it is also part of that is paying attention to what's going to be most supportive for you to do that. What's the context that will really support you doing what you're doing or wanting to do? So you have having a replacement behavior. What am I really going to do here instead of the old behavior? Because otherwise we have nothing to go to. We'll just default back to the old behavior.
Right. Because it's comfortable and easy and it's habitual for us.
Yeah. And then there's the practice it 1,000 times before it really gets in the muscle.
Mm-hmm. Knowledge is only a rumor until it lives in your muscle.
Right. Yeah. One of my friends and fellow coaches would say understanding, which we can do that very well. Understanding is the booby prize. What you're really looking for is change in behavior.
Oh, hang on. Say that again.
Understanding is the booby prize. What we're really looking for is a change in behavior. I can understand it intellectually, but until I have it in the muscle, until I have a new behavior that's readily accessible, that's when we really come through.
Oh, I'm so using that tomorrow with the group I start with. That is excellent. Thank you for sharing that. I want to add one tiny little other comment and sharing is bringing us back to we're all human and we're all figuring out stuff. And we all have practices and we all have behaviors that we can tweak and edit. And that's the invitation of leaning into life, that none of us have it all figured out all the time. And that's never, ever an expectation or a standard. Rather, can we be aware and observe and be curious about how are my behaviors leaning me into the life that I really want, that matters to me with the people that I really care about? And are there some tiny tweaks for us all to make? Hell yes. Okay, great. Let's do that together.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a lovely way to end this conversation.
Well, thank you, Charles. I, through this conversation, have some tweaks and intentional replacement behaviors that I'm going to work on that I will share with you the next time we chat.
Me too. Thank you. And you can kind of check in on, if you feel free to check in on me and see if I've done anything about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you too, Charles. We'll see you next time. On behalf of both Charles and myself, we want to say a big thank you to our producer and sound editor, Chad Penner, Hillary Rideout of Inside Out Branding, who does our promotion, our amazing graphics and marketing for us. And our theme music was composed by Jonas Smith. If you have any questions or comments for us about the podcast, if you have a trust-related situation that you'd like us to take up in one of our episodes, we'd love to hear from you at trust at trustonpurpose.org.
And we'd also like to thank you, our listeners. Take care and keep building trust on purpose. Until next time.
Until next time.